All right, welcome back to Mormon Expression Voices. It's been a while, hasn't it?
I thought I got to introduce it. What are you doing introducing it?
I'm exercising my male privilege.
Always. That's the patriarchy, folks, in action. You heard it here tonight.
Good God. All right, so we've had a hiatus for Voices for a while.
And Voices has gone silent, if you will.
And so we want to do a special interview to start out, so I decided I was going to interview Lindsay.
And I decided I was going to interview John.
Which I don't understand because it's all out there already. I don't know there's anything interesting to say. You know, this sort of speaks to why I started Voices in the first place. When I first was struggling, you know, I found repositories of stories. I think there was one on Post-Mormon. There was one on RFM. Just had lots and lots of stories. And that humanizing element of this struggle, the faith and the struggle of transition, was more meaningful to me emotionally than all the facts and whatnot and story on polygamy or whatever. It was extremely important to me, although it's something I sort of grew beyond. And one of the reasons I started the podcast is because I think that communication verbally is much more effective. It's what we've evolved to listen to. So putting those things together, I thought Voices was an important, something that needed to be done.
And not just that, as Mormon people, we are taught to bear our testimony. We're taught to express our feelings and to talk about what our journey or how we feel. And I feel like everyone out there has a story and everyone's story can be interesting and that they need to tell it.
Yeah. And the model actually that I introduced when we first started it, NPR has been running a program for a lot of years called StoryCorps, where they run these booths all over the country and they just drop them in malls and then people come in and talk to each other. And some of the most heartbreaking and enjoyable radio 5-6 minute segments I've ever heard comes from that StoryCorps. And that's sort of what I had in the back of my mind when I started this. The practicality of it is we oftentimes have somebody interviewing somebody else, but I think that energy, that space between two people is what is compelling. So as we get this up and going again, you know, I invite you all out there to reach out to us. You can contact us at voices@mormonexpression.com. And the wonderful Katrine has taken over and agreed to be the director of this podcast. I wouldn't be doing my duty if I didn't say none of this is free. And if it's something you believe in, head over to Mormon Expression Voices or mormonexpression.com/voices, and you can choose to donate and subscribe and throw us a couple dollars and help support this.
Yeah, and I'm just going to add to what you said. We need your support and your donations because we're doing a lot of good projects with Whitefields right now. We're doing group therapy sessions, support groups for people who are dealing with a religious identity disruption. And I think everyone out there listening hopefully knows what that feels like. And so your donations go directly to that.
All right.
Okay.
We got that out of the way.
Done our ads out of the way.
So Lindsay, when did we first meet?
I met you when I wanted to come on to talk about polygamy.
Yes, we brought you on to Mormon Expression. That was back in Studio 1A to talk about polygamy. Now, you blog under the pseudonym
Winterbuzz.
What? You just shook your head.
It's a weird name. They had asked me to do a guest post once, and I didn't want to put it under my real name. And so when I was a girl, I always liked the name Winter. I wanted to be named Winter. I know. I was 14.
I'm hearing that like frozen winter. Isn't that key for lesbian stuff?
Yeah, it's code words. Now you all know. Now we've come out on the podcast. No, winter. And then, I had worked for a company called Buzz Photo at the time. So Winter Buzz. That's where it came from.
So you did the earth shattering expose of Joseph Smith's wives.
Yeah. I mean, I was really a hack. I was just building on information that people like Todd Compton had already done, but we had put it out there and it was very popular.
And so, and you said the Bloggernacle, that was released on Feminist Mormon Housewives blog, which is a very popular, a lot of traffic. You guys cause, the church to take notice sometimes.
Yeah. They've contacted us several times.
The church itself has.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. What sort of thing do they contact you about?
Once we had,
they don't just want you to bake.
Just trying to think if I need to be careful about this.
Or
yeah,
clean up
they want us to come clean out the bathrooms. No, one time we had the previous Young Women's Presidency contact us before they were released. So this would have been 4 months before April, and we had written a post about women struggling with the church, and they said, "Hey, we're interested in knowing why. Will you meet with us?" And so we set up a meeting in Salt Lake, and then they ended up snubbing us and meeting with a more faithful Mormon women's blog. And that was kind of a blow, especially to me at the time, because I was still really holding out hope that they would listen to me. So I took it really personally. But one of the counselors contacted us via phone, and she had a phone conversation with another blogger who had written the blog post. But she said it was a really weird blog, a really weird phone conversation, because she was just interested in the blogging aspects. She didn't care about like what the issues were. She was just like, well, why do people come to blogs? Why are they, what are they getting out of your blog? So we've had a few things like that. We've, partnered with LDS Philanthropies, which is arm of the presiding bishopric. I mean, there's a lot of faithful people at Feminist Mormon Housewives. So,
well, you have the word Mormon in your title.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a, we tagline ourselves as a place to be feminist and faithful. And you know, I saw on Reddit the other day, someone was like, oh, all those people at FMH, do you think they're just faking it, or are they victims of Stockholm syndrome? Like, we get that, we get that accusation all the time.
Oh, yeah. So we brought you on the podcast, and you did a wonderful job, and you had great chemistry. And you know, a lot of people like to come on the podcast, and I appreciate them all, but there are a few that are magical, and you were one of those, Lindsay.
I'm magical. Aw.
So later, did you approach me, or did I approach you?
I don't know. I think I hung out with you and Zilpha for a while, and we talked, you know, Mormonism for a while, became friends.
Yeah, and I'm thinking particularly when we decided to do the Feminist Mormon Housewives podcast.
We had talked, that was pretty early on, you know, we were talking about in the feminist world how the Mormon podcast scene in general was really dominated by men.
Yes.
And even the feminist podcasts were male-centered, like subjects that men wanted to talk about, which is fine. There are some great feminist podcasts out there. But we wanted a place where women could talk about the issues that were bothering them or that were on their mind. And we really felt like there had to be something coming from women doing that. And so you and I had talked about it, and you're like, well, yeah, I'll help you set that up.
Yeah, it's always been something that I'm sure there'll be a lot of people don't believe this, but it's been something that's bothered me. And I've spent, for every hour I've spent getting a man on the podcast, I've spent 5 or 6 or 7 hours trying to get women on the podcast, because to me, it's a real imbalance that you're talking about half the population and a point of view. But because of, in my opinion, socialization, how we're raised, how men and women are taught to engage the world, that, I find that when I invite women on, they're much more dismissive of their own opinions and their own voice than men are. And I'm much, much more likely to get a man on this podcast who is overconfident in how interesting he is. And the women are much underconfident on how interesting they are. So to me, you know, with your ability and then the opportunity to provide that voice, I think was extremely important.
Yeah, it was really good. And we were up against some challenges right to begin with, but I think Zilpha really helped with that. There's this whole stigma that feminism is tackling, and it has tackled since you and I started Feminist Mormon Housewives, but what it was that women aren't funny and that women aren't interesting. And I heard that all the time. And it's a huge feminist debate out there. You know, it's a huge debate out there that women aren't funny. And it's because we are not used to listening to women being in these roles. And it's happening more and more, but there's this whole idea behind it. And I feel like, you know, there was this criticism like, well, I wouldn't listen to a woman's podcast. They're just not interesting. And I feel like we do come up against that stereotype too. And it's really hard to take
from
that.
From both men and women.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so, and I haven't heard anything personally, but if I were to hear that it was boring or something, it'd be really hard for me to say, well, is that because I'm boring, or is the podcast boring, or is it just because you're not used to listening to women? And other podcasts that have had women on it, I've heard people say that about. And I think that that's something that we're up against, but we've been able to combat pretty successfully.
Yeah, I think you guys are doing the Lord's work, so I'm proud of it.
Thank you.
And I'm even nervous.
We got best podcast of the year this year.
Congratulations! You know, by the time we'd come around to this, Mormon Expression, of course, formed the parent company Whitefields, and so the deal was that we just paid for it, and then I stepped out of the way.
Yeah. You didn't just pay for it. You and Zilpha trained me. I mean, they put hours into showing me how to edit it. I went over once and I think Zilpha was doing school, but you let me record a few and then you showed me how to do it and they bought me all the equipment. They came to my house. They came to my house with dinner. You guys had like two bags of dinner, what was it? Barbecue dinner or something. And they set up everything and it was great. It was very kind of you.
Well, thank you. Yeah. There's been quite a few people over the years who've listened to the podcast who've come on that I have invested time and treasure in and trying to get them up to speed. It's not, you know, over the years, you learn a lot of little things. You buy a lot of stuff. It's not free. I was calculating out the audio setup in here and we're in the studio, costs about $10,000. Yep. There's this ethic out there. It's kind of a perverse ethic that comes out of the church, because what the church does very effectively is it has you pay tithing over here mentally. You think about it in another place, and then everything in the church is free, right? Nothing in the church is free. You're paying for it all, but rhetorically, they've been able to separate that. And I think that ethic unfortunately follows a lot of people who leave the church, and they first of all think that they were ripped off, and then secondly, they think everything should be free. And it's something we combat against.
But I just want to say something about you for a minute in this regard.
Oh.
people don't realize this. And I see criticism sometimes of you online thinking, oh, you know, John's a different person now or whatever the criticism is. I don't think people realize, me seeing it from behind the scenes, how much, not just, I mean, hours and hours and hours of time that he's donated, but I get to look at our donations and I will go in there every once in a while and there will be large sums of money that John has donated. And large sums of money. So when John is asking for donations, he is ponying up. You know, he's not asking something he wouldn't give from himself. And I think it's a really Mormon idea too. Mormons have this thing where we think everything has to be free, right? Because we grew up with it.
Yep.
So Mormons are like, you should be getting paid for that. I remember when John DeLynn was talking about his finances, everyone was freaking out.
That he would get paid for it. And people will go buy an iPhone knowing that there's thousands of douchebags making millions and billions of dollars off that. They have no problem dropping that $500, but something they spent hours and hours, thousands of hours of their life listening to John DeLynn's thing, and he's making a very, very modest income off it, and they light him up. When that happened, I got so, it was one of those times, there's times with the ex-Mormon community, I just want to burn it all down, and that was one of them. It's like, Why, when one guy tries to do this thing that you all are consuming and you're going and buying fucking burritos for $12 but this guy does all this work.
That's profoundly affected your life.
Right. I figure behind every podcast, and this probably goes for John, represents on the back end and dealing with people and stuff, 10 hours of work.
Yep, minimum probably.
Probably more than that now that I'm thinking about it. Probably more like 20. So when you're talking about episode 265 or whatever it is we're at, you know, you're talking about years worth of work.
And here's the other thing. This is what I've seen with you. You have more people come into your studio, especially your home, than I ever did. You know, I usually do Skype interviews for mine. But every time I would go into a recording, there are always people that stay and are sobbing or crying, and I've had to hold some of them before, but they're always hugging you, these strangers, and people don't see that either. You know, there's a lot of, dare I say, ministry going on too. Does that make you uncomfortable using the word ministry?
Well, no, because I don't have anything to offer them other than support. I don't have any direction to send them other than, we're all children lost in the woods, so to speak. This is a very, very difficult thing to deal with. Yeah, there's a sense of, and I see this in DeLynn, I see this in everybody who gets involved, this sense of compassion for what's happening. Sometimes it grows out of self-pity. I mean, out of a lot of things, but.
What do you think about the accusation that people like us have egos because we're hosting podcasts?
Well, of course we do.
I'm awesome. Do you hear that, people?
Well, I mean, the But what I don't understand is why that's a criticism here. Cause you look at almost everything we value in American culture. Somebody who wants to be a singer, somebody who wants to be an athlete, somebody who wants to be a successful businesswoman, somebody who wants to be on the top. These are all ego driven things. So I would say our entire economic model, our school system, and almost everything we value is based on somebody saying, yeah, I can go get that. I can do it. I'm the person to do. You know, it's like, is there more ego here than there is like an average bar on a Wednesday night at a karaoke stage? Well, probably not.
Just a lot less liquor.
It's true. Depends. It takes a certain amount of ego to record your voice and put it out to the world. But it also takes a certain amount of ego to join a softball team. A healthy, creative individual has a certain amount of ego that's going to want them to succeed and want them to show that they're of value. And oftentimes we do that in competition. I think something like this podcast, there's definitely competition, and we can talk about that in a minute, but it's not a zero sum game. You know, if my podcast is competing with other podcasts, that doesn't take away from their podcast. John Dillon and I are actually good friends. And one thing we talk about all the time is how both of our podcasts and both of our projects are very, very complementary to one another, and they always have been, but people oftentimes frame us as if we're in like this heated battle.
It's more interesting that way. and I feel like what people don't see is there's also a downside to doing these. When you put your name out there and you become known or you speak out, which is a good thing, you also can lose things. I mean, everyone that I know that has spoken out that is considered a leader, I hate using the word leader because Mormons and ex-Mormons are so triggered by authority. But anyone that speaks out and does so successfully, they lose a lot of things too. They can.
Yeah. I don't. Before I say anything I'm about to say here, I don't want it to sound like self-pity because that's not what I have. I have a great life, but I have traded off for the little bit of fame that I have a lot of things. For example, it's harder for me to form normal relationships with people. People don't treat me like they do other people. And that's both for good and for bad. I joke about it sometimes, but people come up to me with a certain expectation of how I'll behave. And if I don't meet their expectation, sometimes they're very disappointed. And people will get, I get emails every week asking me for things. Oftentimes, we were joking about this before we recorded, asking me to help them do research. And if I don't turn around and give them like the source for some obscure piece of shit information out of a book, sometimes they get angry. And you've probably seen this. There are people who will send you long letters asking for God knows what. Oftentimes it's not even clear what they want. And if you respond and say, well, thank you for sending it or whatever, they'll be like, oh, you big dick. Why didn't you, I don't know what they want from, or maybe I should say I'm not able to.
Well, and not just that, but I mean, part of the things that I do for Whitefields is I go through the emails, right? And there are so many emails. And I have this too. I get a lot of Facebook messages and different email accounts. It's hard to keep track of all of that. And it's not because we're not sincere. We don't want to. But I see that criticism too, which is, oh, they just think that they're too good.
They're too good to respond.
Yeah. And that's not the case at all. It's just that we have lives. I mean, we have full lives. I'm a parent. You're a parent. We have families that we have to manage and all of that. And the other thing that I think that I've seen over the past while since I've known you guys is you've had to go through, I guess I would say, a public divorce through the podcast.
Yeah.
And that's something a lot of people don't realize what that's like. I mean, when that happened, I don't know if you remember, if there was any sort of hint or rumor or announcement, it would make it to all the online boards. All the groups were talking about it. Everyone was asking questions that probably you didn't need to have asked.
They still do. I still get email. When we announced, and the main reason we decided to announce is because we were in the public eye. So rumors were starting to fly around or whatever. And we said, oh, let's just cut it off at the knees and just announce it. And we got hate mail. And I don't know, for people who haven't, Zilpha and I are still friendly, but a divorce is a very difficult thing to go through. And it's something that's even hard to understand unless you've done it. It is emotionally devastating, even when it's amicable, because you're giving up this dream that you've been working for. And, you know, Zilpha and I came to the same conclusion that it would be best for both of us to separate. And luckily, we were both mature enough to make it about the kids, and we've made the best decision we could about the kids and how we live and structure our lives. And I think things have gone off very well on that front, on that end. But after all those years of working towards this dream that you have to just watch choke out is, I wouldn't wish it on anybody.
Well, but not just that. I mean, you had to separate your actual life, but you had a persona on the podcast. I mean, the podcast was you and Zilpha. You had this great magic going on, this great chemistry. And so people, I think, felt betrayed too. Like, wait a minute, you guys can't do that.
Yeah, they felt angry. And Zilpha. And they expressed anger towards us. And even people who were working with me on the podcast turned.
Yeah.
Because they felt that I wasn't giving them enough. And there's a time in the darkest days of that sort of thing where you're doing everything you can just to get up and feed the kids and go to work, and you just can't do everything that you did before. Let me talk a little bit about Lindsay.
Okay. I have an ego, so I love to talk about myself.
Lindsay is an amazing person and does many, many things. And
I like where this is going. Go on.
Sorry. There were days where, partly because I have this bombastic persona, where I was completely alone, except for Lindsay. And she would call me almost every day.
Bugging the crap out of him.
And she would just ask me how I was doing. And I know that I'm not the only person that Lindsay does that for. That Lindsay was smart enough to be able to tune in and just be sincerely concerned about how I was doing.
He's totally upplaying it. I was like, have you done this? You got to do this. Give me this. Will you research this? I'm just kidding. I never asked him to do that, but I should have.
When the church lost Lindsay, they lost one of the good ones.
Aww.
Because purely out of the goodness of her own heart. And I know that I'm not the only one on her call list, that she has a genuine concern for people, period.
That's true. But you know what? I'm lucky. And I think you're lucky in this regard, is a lot of people listening out there don't have the kind of network that we have. I mean, you've built your network. I was kind of grandfathered into Feminist Born Housewives. And we don't get a lot of things right, but there are some things we do get right. And one of the things that we got right with me is they just let me process what I was going through. And I'm incredibly lucky, because I know a lot of people out there listening have had to do it alone. And we've been lucky.
Yeah, for sure. And those networks are volatile. This is one of the hard things. And one of the inspirations behind setting up things like Whitefields is people move on. And people can't keep giving of themselves indefinitely. So one of the ideas is to put that structure up in place. Because I know for you, Lindsay, and I know there's been times for me, you give everything that you have. And then unfortunately, I was talking to a dear friend a little while ago about life's work. And what our life's work would be. And I was expressing, you know, that this is my life's work to criticize the Mormon church. It sort of pisses me off a little bit. I don't want it to be, and I hope someday to move on, but it can be very gratifying sometimes. But man, we give all we have and then some sometimes.
Yeah. And it's really hard. I mean, you and I have both had to face criticism from family, and you said on one of your podcasts on Mormon Expression that we're turncoats. I mean, the worst thing you can be in the Mormon church sometimes is not, you know, a non-member. It's a traitor.
Oh, yeah, always. Always. The traitors in human history are always worse than the enemy.
But is it Oliver Cowdery that said, I didn't leave the church left me?
That was, Martin Harris.
Martin Harris. That's how I feel. I mean, Stephanie Lawrenson just wrote this great post in the City Weekly about how Mormonism has prepared her to move on. It's because she was brought up to believe she was a child of God that she believes all people are children of God, you know, including LGBT brothers and sisters. And so that's what ultimately made her leave the church. And I kind of feel the same way. Like the things that were promised to me in the church, I was promised that we need to be Christ-like, that we need to be kind. And then when, you know, push came to shove later on and I'm seeing things play out politically with the church, we're not practicing what we preach.
Well, let's talk about the push and shove because, I don't, you know, this isn't a pity party, but the things that happen and this is part and parcel to who you are, Lindsay. Let's talk about Daycare Gate.
It's got a name now.
So Lindsay, this is during about the same time, during my dark time. Lindsay, you ran a daycare.
It was a preschool. I like to have the distinction.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry.
My mom teaches preschool. She has for years. And if you call it a daycare, she's like, it's not the same thing.
Okay. But so yours were like 3 or 4 year olds, not like.
And it was for like, it was structured and there was like a detailed curriculum.
And you had how many students?
For 10 years, I would have 3 classes. I had usually 30 kids and, a waiting list that was really long. I was really good at it, really successful.
Yeah.
Making some money.
Yeah. It was your business and it was something you were good at and you were popular.
I was popular and, it was a family business. My mom has done it ever since I was little and my sisters all do it and I did it. It's what we have in common.
And then a word got out.
Yeah. I was trying to be careful with what I put online, even though I was blogging, but I was still blogging under a pseudonym. But, you know, Facebook is always changing their security things. And so I had liked something. I can't remember. Somehow it got out that I supported gay marriage. And about this time is when I decided to take a break from church.
Not that you wanted to take a gay lover.
No.
That you just supported gay marriage.
Just that I supported gay marriage. Now, if you back up, it wasn't always that way. I used to be a little bit bigoted, probably a lot bigoted, but one time, the second year I'd done preschool, there was a little girl that lived a few houses down and she was walking to my house and was allegedly flashed on her way to my house. And the story grew and grew. And then the flasher was wearing women's clothing. And then he said this to her and he said this. And it became this witch hunt. And the only man that they accused in the neighborhood was the only gay man in our neighborhood.
Hmm.
And I remember at the time thinking,
because if there's one thing gay men like, it's little girls.
Yeah, right. And this poor man, he let the police search his home and everything and they've for women's clothing and they didn't find it. And I remember at the time being like, well, yeah, that makes sense because he's gay, right? And then I thought, well, no, that doesn't make sense. This isn't right. And that's what kind of started it out for me. So I started questioning that when it happened. So people knew that I was a little bit like, guys, we can't accuse someone when there's no evidence, you know?
Ooh,
so that was
liberal.
Out there. Yeah. And so couple that with me starting to become more and more inactive in my ward's eyes. And you got to understand, I was so Mormon, you know, like I was super involved. I gave everything that I give here, I gave to the church. So I was doing extra credit.
Mm-hmm.
So I think they were thinking, what's going on with her? Yeah. So it got out that I supported gay marriage. That was a problem.
So the word gets out among the gossip channels of the ward in the neighborhood that you support gay marriage. What happens next?
So I noticed people stop calling me. This is actually the first time. I think I can start talking about this without crying now because it hasn't been that very long since I stopped crying. But yeah, my enrollment started dropping to a screeching halt. And usually by April, I have a full list, full class for the next fall and a waiting list. And I couldn't even get 2 people on my list. And I knew something was wrong and I figured it was because I wasn't at church. I mean, there's networking that goes on at church. You know, people trust me because I'm Mormon and, you know, Mormons will leave their kid with a stranger in nursery as long as they're Mormon.
Mm-hmm.
So that really helped. And so I thought it was just that. I was surprised. But when the fall came, I had 4 kids.
So in a single year, you dropped from
30 with a waiting list to 4. And, I was able to finally muster it up to 6, one of those being my own son.
Did anybody during this time, any of those 26, did anybody call you and say, hey, this was all off of rumors based on what they saw off of Facebook?
Nope, not yet. That didn't happen. But it was already awkward. You know, Mormons aren't really good at directness.
Right.
So, I mean, I would see these people and it was really awkward and it would be the same stuff that you all get out there. Like,
But nobody approached you at all.
No one approached me, no. So it was the second day of class. It was the second day and a woman came up to me and said, hey, I just want to let you know that I'm pulling my daughter out. And I said, is everything okay? And she said, oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. I just want to tell you, because I think you're a really nice person, that it's nothing personal. And I know that you've had some trouble. So I just want to tell you that it's nothing personal. And I said, wait, what do you mean trouble? What are you talking about? And she said, well, I just know a lot of people won't come to your preschool anymore. And I said, is it because of church? And she said, well, I'm not one to gossip, but I will just say this, having you be Mormon, it's not the most important thing to me, but it's definitely a perk. And I said, well, I mean, is that why? Because I'm still Mormon, you know, I'm just going through some stuff and I'm just questioning. And she said, well, we're going to do something else. And I said, it's only the second day. Have I done anything? You know? And so that was the first thing when it was said to me. And then about a month later, a woman, a very sweet Mormon friend of mine that had had two of her kids come to my preschool, showed up at my door in tears. And I opened the door and I said, come in. And she just burst into tears. And she said, Lindsay, I'm so sorry, but I have to tell you what's being said about you. And I said, okay, what is it? And she said, there's a group of women that organized a ban against your preschool. And I said, organized a ban? And she said, yeah. And I said, what do you mean they organized a ban? And she said, well, the reasons I heard were that you're too liberal and you support gay marriage. And I said, so it's not even about me not going to church. And she said, well, that's just what I heard. They got together and decided to go somewhere else. And of course I was devastated. Suspecting it is one thing, but having people tell you to your face and knowing that, I mean, these people, I'd had all their kids. I mean, I'd done this for 10 years. You know, everyone where I live calls me Miss Lindsay. My whole house is dedicated to it. Like it was my life and that's mm-hmm. what I did. And that was really, really hard. And then I found out later that the people that chose to stay, there are some women that approached them and said, are you sure you want to keep our kids in there?
They put pressure on them.
They put pressure. And luckily those people stayed. And this isn't a total sob story. I've had people stand up for me. I've had, you know, good people who disagree with me on probably every level support me. So, that's been nice.
So people sometimes ask me why I'm angry at the church, whatever. I'm actually not angry, but here you have somebody, Lindsay at the time, struggling with belief. And you still believe in God, right?
I do. Yeah.
So Lindsay, who's not turned like, and Lindsay, you don't drink.
I don't drink.
You don't drink coffee?
I never have. No.
You don't drink tea?
Nope.
You're still sort of...
I try not to curse.
You're still sort of Mormon-y.
I'm very Mormon, yeah.
Here you have on rumors of not conforming to something that's tertiary to even Mormon belief. And they organized specifically in the auspice of their religious organization to destroy your life.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think that they see it that way at all. I think they, you know, a good friend told me that the marriage debate was heating up here more and more in Utah. And I think that they needed a hard surface to strike against. You know, Mormons are taught to stand as a witness. And so they saw a place to do it. I mean, they didn't have gay people in their lives that I know about that they could stand up against. And so they saw it in me. That was a way that they could show their faith, that they could stand. I mean, I really think that their motives were as kind as could be, that they were just doing what was right.
Right.
I wouldn't be the first person has happened to.
No, you're exactly right. Which is why religion is fucking corrupt. Because you have people who do things that are awful. That, everybody listening to your story is aghast. And there's people who are believers say, oh, well, we would never do that. But this sort of stuff happens all the time. And these women can do something that's awful, that is terrible. And I'm not saying women.
People trusted me with their kids for years.
And on the turn of this theology, they would be willing to bring that down.
And I want to be clear. I wasn't on Facebook saying like, all you conservatives need to shut up. I mean, I was liking things
Lindsay,
here and there.
Is a diplomatic person who loves everybody and you truly love all sides.
Yeah.
And I've seen that in my interaction with you. Like you don't have any malice towards anybody in this fight. And the fact that these women put it on you shows the level of corruption of the doctrine because there's no other explanation. It's not in your nature.
Yeah. That was a hard one.
Do you remember what I told you, Lindsay?
Which time? You realize I was calling you because I was in pain too. So it was self-serving. It's not like I'm this angel.
It was a terrible thing to have happen, but you're destined for greater things, Lindsay.
That's true. He did. He said he was not worried about it, that he was always so disappointed that that was going to be my life's work. Not that there's anything wrong with that.
No, but we need to, you have a greater calling in life. So yeah, that's miserable. That's awful stuff.
Yeah, it's been hard. And you know, the hardest thing going through it is one thing because it's just like a fog. You don't understand making sense of it. I mean, still, it's still hard for me to understand that happened. Because on the, like when you're talking about it, John, I'm like, oh yeah, I can see why people would do that. I've heard of stories. But when it's happening to you, you blame yourself. You think, no, it must be because I've done this or done this or done this. You can't make sense of it.
Religion is hardwired into our emotion. And we can talk about sort of the why I do the podcast in a little bit. I don't want to get into that yet, but it so connects to those nerve endings. And we talk about all these things intellectually, but that's not how people process religion. And that's why religion starts wars and starts fights and all this stuff, because it happens on such a deep level in our brain. And that when you hear these stories, they sound bad, but you process them so close to the heart. And it's funny, this cold war, like people ask me a lot, like, well, how does your family respond to the podcast? And my answer is always the same. They've never acknowledged that it exists. Never. We've never talked about it at all.
Which I'm finding, I don't know if it's healthy or not, but has been the best way for me to deal with my family and this sort of thing so far.
We do not talk. And that's a positive thing. I have a great relationship with my parents. They're wonderful grandparents. They're such a great influence in my children's life. My brothers and sisters, we don't have a lot in common. We get along, but we don't hang out together. But I know that no one really says anything to me, but I know they talk about me a lot. Matter of fact, I had a cousin once removed who told me, he had left the church, and, he told me when he told his mom that he wasn't going to church anymore, and we had no apparent contact. Like there was nothing in his mother's eyes to connect him to me. And the first thing she said is, you haven't been talking to John, have you? And this is a woman, you know, even though she's my cousin, there's like a ton of us and I'm at the tail end. So I have cousins that are literally like 75 years old and stuff. But it's clear that there's this, and you get glimpses of it. There's this gossip war of things that they've never even ever acknowledged. Who knows what they say about me? I know when the divorce was coming about, I caught wind of some of rumors. But I would have friends that would tell me, yeah, there's a lot of nasty things being said, but they never would say that there's this Mormon, and I'm sure this happens outside the church, but it's such an element of control out there, and it can make you feel so isolated and so alone and so lost when the people that you depend on, your ward members, the families who, you know, who you had this relationship with, your own brothers and sisters, suddenly you get this wall of coldness.
What's hardest about it, and I think everyone can relate to this, but you and me, you with the divorce and me with this preschool thing, when bad things happen to you, the church makes it so, with this narrative that apostates, you leave the church, so you're unhappy. People told me, very close people in my family, that I brought this on myself, that I deserved it. And there's a part of me that believed it, you know? And that was the hardest part.
I've said before that I read a book on, brainwashing, on mind control, a few years ago. And they talked about, you know, like if you're in a Korean war, in a Korean internment camp, what they do is they take everything away from you. And then the guard will give you food, and not very good food, but you'll develop this weird psychological relationship with that guard, because that, even though that guard might come in and spray you with the hose or beat you with a pipe or whatever, but you know that they have the ability to give you an extra piece of meat for dinner. And you'll develop this Stockholm, it goes beyond Stockholm syndrome. It's this real phenomenon. So what does the church do when you go through crisis? Like, let's say you have an affair. They're going to cut you off from everything except the bishop. And the bishop is going to be punishing you and rewarding you at the same time. The bishop is going to be, he's going to hold your fate in his hand, or the stake president, or whoever your authority is, that they can publicly humiliate you, or they cannot do that. They can put you before a court or they can just work with you. And that leads this weird, perverse sort of master-slave relationship. But one of the elements is to cut you off from all other support. And they will do things like tell, if you have something go wrong in your life, they'll tell you not to talk to anybody about it. They'll release you from your callings. They'll ostracize you as much as you can. And you see that perverse cultural action seep into the culture. And so the debate among ex-Mormons and Mormons isn't about Joseph Smith and all this stuff, but on an emotional level, it's not about this. It's this insidious psychological warfare that's going on, which takes us back to Whitefields.
Yeah, I mean, this is the thing that I think a lot of people that struggle with their faith go through. We're only doing what we were taught, to do what is right, to be good. I mean, I'm sure that there are people that aren't, but I know for me, truth was so important to me because I was taught the truth is what matters. And so that's why I speak out. That's why I continue to speak out. I feel really driven to do what is right.
Well, I feel driven by that sense of truth and doing right and trying to do whatever I can to fix this awful situation. And the awful situation is this psychology, this loneliness that people go through. One of the chief complaints I get about the podcast is that it's too many F-bombs and too critical to the church. And what people say to me all the time is, I really want to take, they'll say something like this, I really want my wife to listen to this, but you know, you're so over the top that I can't have her listen to it because I want to get her out of the church. Everything I do is pretty calculated. Is that a bad thing to admit? I swear in the podcast on purpose.
Is it to offend me, John?
Well, it's to make you laugh. That's number one.
It is funny when he curses.
But
I feel like I'm 12.
The podcast is the tone it takes towards the church is on purpose. I have no interest in getting people who are happy in the church out of the church because the process of losing one's faith and transitioning in life is so painful. Even though I think this stage in life to be free from those strictures is a much better way to live. And I'm fully vested in raising my children that way. And what I'm after, what I hope the podcast attracts, are people who have taken that leap, that journey themselves, and are now looking to help put the pieces back together. So what I'm saying is the podcast, the rhetoric on the podcast is bombastic in part to keep those folks away because they're not ready for it. When they are ready to really start deconstructing this stuff, then they will be able to stomach the fuck bombs.
And there are podcasts out there, you know, for them.
Yes.
There's so many Mormon podcasts these days that there's something for everyone. But yeah, another thing that I think that I've noticed with the podcast with Mormon Expression is that it's kind of followed you on your journey. And you're no longer interested in appeasing this patriarchal, hierarchical obedience that the church enforces, that culture, but you're just being authentic. And that's something that a lot of ex-Mormons need. I mean, that's something that Mormons need. We are taught to shut off our authentic self. And authentic selves are messy and they curse. And
they are. It's not scripted, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, I get feedback saying, hey, why don't you go back to doing it this way? It's like, well, I'm talking about what I want to talk about, right?
Yeah. And we have a lot of good stuff to work you through. That's what archives are for.
Yeah. Yeah. If you like, the fall season of 2010, go listen to it, right?
But don't you also think that in our community, I've noticed a shift as there more and more of us are growing, more and more of us are speaking out. And the church is, you know, doubling down on a lot of stuff, that the culture is also changing too. If you want to find out bad stuff about the church, go online. There are hundreds of places to find that out. But there's not a lot of places.
Tons of them under LDS.org.
Right. Yeah. Open your scriptures. But, you can, there's not a lot of resources to pick up those pieces. I mean, it's kind of like, look, the church is so bad. Get out. Now what? And I feel like that that's the work that you and I are interested in, because even though I'm not interested in getting out of the church yet, and you are, you and I see that common need of, we've both had to rebuild the pieces and we want to do it in a healthy way. And there's right. not a lot of community for that.
Yeah. Yeah. Because it's the church, it's the machine, and it's undirected. You know, I see a lot of vitriol directed towards the leadership of the church, understandably. But you have to understand they're victims of the system just like everybody else is. They did not design this system. And these systems sort of evolve on their own. Like if somebody had gone back in time and killed Hitler when he was 9, the SS would have still risen to power, that there would have still been something like that. These things happen. And we have to fight against the machines. And that's different than the individual fight. And that nuanced view that I have there is lost on a lot of people. But that fight against the machine is the broader fight. But individually, it's how do we get these people to a healthier place? I feel more like a battlefield medic than like a battlefield commander. It's true the other side's my enemy, but there's all these fallen bodies. Now, where I disagree with some of my New Order Mormon and Mormon stories sort of people, philosophically, not individually, but philosophically, is I think that the church is bad. And you shouldn't go back in and support it because it's a harmful organization. It hurts gay people. It hurts people running daycares. It has these structures in place that cause a lot of pain and suffering. And I want the church to go away. That being said, what the podcast is about and what my mission individually about is how do we take individuals and have them deconstruct their past and find healthy alternatives in the future to move on to a better life?
Yeah. I mean, we talk about this at Feminist Warren Housewives quite a bit. Feminism isn't just, you know, a theory that you can beat people over the head with. It's, I'm a feminist and I love Disney. Disney has plenty of problems. But the good thing for me to do is have the power and the tools to deconstruct why Disney could be a problem and then go on from there. If I want to continue to watch Disney, great. But at least I'm going in with more informed opinions. And I know that Disney is selling this message to me or doing this or whatever. I'm sorry, Disney. I didn't mean to pick on you. I love you, Disney.
Well, I think to your point, you know, the Mormon Expression is just the first half of what I'd like to see accomplished because it helps people deconstruct. It really helps a lot of people, thousands and thousands of people. The central message of Mormonism is you're not crazy. The system is crazy. You know, it's like the last one we recorded, it'll be out before this, was on hell. And we go through for an hour and explain how ridiculous the doctrine of hell is. But we take a minute and say, look, people really believe this stuff. This is really damaging things. It's fun to laugh at. It's fun to look and say, oh my God, we all believed this in the past. But then you take a step back and say, whoa, this was causing problems. This was affecting the way we live our lives. So that's what Mormon Expression does. It helps you realize it's not me, it's the system. But what Whitefields does is says, what's next?
Yeah.
And I think where the mission gets a little muddy for people to understand is we're not really telling you what's next. Like we're not trying to establish a new church. We're not trying to establish new social structures, but we're trying to work with psychologists and counselors and whatever else we can to point people in the right direction so they can construct healthy lifestyles.
Yeah. I mean, you guys had a prophet and you followed him. We're not a new prophet. And that's the thing that I've had to learn. I'm so used to looking for someone else to tell me what to do, a bishop or a prophet or my parents or the church, that I never got used to listening to what I need to do and what I want. And I'm still learning that. It's taking so much time. So Whitefields isn't the new prophet. And we don't want disciples. You know what I mean? And I've seen that in the ex-Mormon community. People will be prominent and they'll have their whole, you know, following. And I'm not knocking that. I feel like that was an unhealthy aspect of me in Mormonism. And I don't want to replicate that now. But I also, something that John and I have talked about with Whitefields, and this is not meant to be a podcast about Whitefields ads, but it's turning into it. We in good conscience could not sit there and break down the church and then leave you there. I mean, we've talked about this. Like, we don't want to just tell you, here's the problem with this, and here's the problem with this, and here's the problem with this. Good luck with that. I mean, we feel like it's community responsibility to point you at least to some resources.
Well, I think it's, you say commercial for Whitefields is largely you and I.
Yeah.
And it's what we believe in, what we're trying to build and what we've taken. I mean, literally, taken the treasure that comes in from Mormon Expression. And what I could have done is, you know, we've had a lot of generous support. I could have traveled the world with it.
Yeah.
But instead it's like building it to try to, you know, why do we have this studio? Well, there's three reasons that the studio exists. One is it was a little bit emotionally difficult to sustain it in my own home, to not have that line of separation. Two, I think that there's a lot of people, one of the most important things, the single most important step in leaving the church is to connect into other people, to feel a sense of community. Because when you leave the church, the church conspires, a la Lindsay, to take away your entire community. Like my North Korean prison, take away everything from you so you have to come crawling back to them. And I've seen it happen over and over and over again. The person who walks in the door, nervous, scared, and lost, looks around the room, hears people talking, sees laughter, sees smiling, and realizes they're not alone, they're not crazy, that there's normal people out there who follow the same path, and it's life transforming. So to, in an easy way, to be able to just come here, sit and watch the podcast and realize you're not alone. That was number two.
And not just that you're not going to be stuck there forever.
You're not going to be stuck there. Absolutely, Lindsay. And then the third reason was we can use the space, just like I've used a lot of most of the donations come into Mormon Expression to fund other things like Feminist Mormon Housewives.
Yep.
I can use this to give the space where we can have these group sessions so we can meet other people and start transforming things in a healthy way. That's why this exists. And to understand who I am, you have to understand the dream I'm pursuing.
And we have to say we're not perfect. We've done some dummy things. I've done some huge dummy things. And it's been really hard too because, you know, I have experienced using my community for my livelihood with preschool and then losing that because of I lost community goodwill. And so it's really, I guess, triggering, if you will, for me to do that again, to build up a community. And then when the community turns on you, as they sometimes do, because we're not perfect, it's really, really hard.
Yeah. And it's something, and this is something every business owner knows about, but I get emails probably once every other week threatening my livelihood if I don't do what they want in the podcast. You know, like I donate, therefore you have to do X, Y, or Z. I usually just ignore those emails, but yeah, you're right. You, and that's why I have a regular full-time job.
You guys, John's not exaggerating. Like when he talks about being hit up in places or all these emails, he's not exaggerating. I was at IKEA a few weeks ago and someone came up to me. I was talking to the salesperson and someone tapped on me and said, "I'm so sorry. Are you Lindsay?" And I said, "Yeah." And they said, "I recognize your voice from Mormon Expression." It's like, oh, that's really cool. But I mean, that was just my one experience. And it's true. It's surprising to me how many people are paying attention.
Yeah. Yeah.
So he's not making it up. He gets tons and tons of emails and there's nothing wrong. If you're one of the people that have sent those emails, it's cool.
I read every email. I've said this before. I don't necessarily have the time or energy to respond to all of them because I work a regular full-time job, partly because of what you've said. I know it's triggering for the community and I don't have any interest in monetizing this project as my chief source of income, partly because you can't afford me.
But not that there's anything wrong if you wanted to.
No, not, but this is a choice that I've made. Now, as far as the structure goes, you know, we're regular nonprofit. We're lawyered up and accounted up and all that kind of stuff. And we run ourselves in a professional manner. And I function as the chairman of the board and executive director. But Lindsay, you are the heir apparent. My plan is up and out in 2 or 3 years. That I've thoroughly enjoyed, and I'm not talking necessarily about Mormon Expression, but I want to help build these things, and then I want to move on to the next phase in my life. I want to do my life.
You're leaving me things in your will? Is that what you're saying?
Lindsay is in the structure here, just so everybody understands, is Lindsay is who I see as who is running this show. And I have a little bit more, I have an MBA, I work for a Fortune 50 company, I, you know, have a lot of management experience, so I kind of know I know what I'm doing a little bit. But I'm trying not to say.
Are you grooming me?
I'm grooming you. This is.
Uh oh, somebody call the cops. That just sounds dirty.
Is grooming behavior a bad thing in feminist theory?
Well, I guess it depends on how you use it. Let's just say when I've heard of the term grooming in regards to the church, it has never been positive. So it's just unusual to hear it used in a positive term.
So we're trying, I think we have a chance here, all of us, to do something exciting. I think we have done something exciting. I think the fact that we've gotten as far as we have, the podcast has had this staying power through my ups and downs.
Mm-hmm.
Through and all the people that I've been able to meet from it and the relationships I've been able to cultivate and the impact it's had on many, many people's lives.
The and on our own. Yeah.
I've heard over and over again is you help me stay sane. And I realize that if there is a Mormon hell, I'm going to it because I've burned my.
But that's okay, because I'll be there. We'll be able to podcast from hell.
Me and the other TK smoothies will be there. Scissoring.
I don't know if you had to put something in the swear jar for that graphic. Well,
I don't
image.
Even have the swear jar out.
That's because you're podcasting with me.
So yeah, I think it's an important part of who we are today.
Yeah, and everyone out there, I mean, I'll say it again, you're not alone. You're not alone. Even if you feel alone, and sometimes you will be alone, you're not alone. I mean, there's so many of us, and we're growing every day.
And it sucks losing one's religion, especially when you took it seriously, as a lot of us did. We were believers. Because Utah is full of Jack Mormons, and I love Jack Mormons, they're fine. But these are people who just sort of wandered off, and they never took it very seriously. But those of us who are sort of obsessive believed it, and we bought in, we drank the Kool-Aid. And if you do that for 30 years and leave the church, you're like Frodo with the ring. You're the injury. You're never, I don't mean to be the one to break this to you, you're never getting better.
That's okay, though.
It's sort of like having an amputation. You know, you're never going to get your leg back. You can go on and live a wonderful, healthy life. There's many wonderful things out there, but you can't ever.
You know, that happened to me yesterday. I had someone tell my son that he wasn't allowed to play with them anymore because of stuff that have been doing online. And it busts me up. And I feel that feeling, which I felt before, which is, sometimes I think I'll never get over the fact that the church isn't what it claimed to be. And that breaks my heart more than anything has ever broken my heart. And, you know, some people say, well, who cares? The church was bad. To me, it was everything. And now it's not what it says it is. It's still something, but it wasn't what it said it is. And that's really hard. And that does stick with you. And I find it creeping up every once in a while still.
Well, and there's such poor boundaries. This happened at my house a few weeks ago. My boy was playing with a friend, and I heard this boy inadvertently, like, bear his testimony of his Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ, to my 10-year-old, my fucking 10-year-old. Now, luckily, he just kind of looked at him and blinked, like, what are you talking about? Because that, it's, you don't do that. That's not okay. But people say, how dare you? How dare you record this podcast to make fun of the church? How dare you not
tear down someone else's religion?
Yeah. But religion itself has such poor boundaries. Like I've had very few fights on Facebook, whatever, but one of them I got into a little bit with a distant relative was, it had to do with the fact that they were talking about people attacking the church. And I pointed out that the church sends out 50 or what is the number now? 80,000 missionaries whose sole aim it is to have people abandon their faith. And just this inability to recognize themselves in the mirror, to recognize how they interact with the world, and such a tiny thing, you know, of like what I do with the podcast here, they see as such a big sliver in their side. Well, I mean.
Which is ironic because you said the inability to look in the mirror. The reason why we're podcasting, the reason why, you know, they say people can't leave the church alone. We're just taking those things we have been taught since birth and just flipping them.
Right, right. And what we do, we do not have the budget to pay somebody a full-time minimum wage worker, right? Mm-hmm. If we hired somebody at minimum wage.
Unless someone out there with the big bucks wants to drop us a huge endowment check right now.
My yes, indeed. But my point is, you go 8 blocks that way and there is an enormous sky rise full of employees. And there's another building out here, and there's another building out here, and there's another building out here of people making professional wages with benefits and everything.
Mm-hmm.
And they, so we are literally functioning on probably 1/1,000,000th of the budget that the church is functioning on. And people will act like we are like the Panzer Division invading Poland, right? You know, we're a handful.
We're like the
of people.
Mobs persecuting the saints.
Yes. This is, I mean, I don't pretend that I'm not a fan of religion. Well, no way. There's too many negatives in there. I don't not pretend that I'm not a fan of religion. I'm not a fan of religion.
There you go.
But one thing that bugs me most about religious people is the persecuted majority complex.
Yes.
You know, even though we have a super majority in the legislature, like anybody even expresses that they disagree with us, we're under persecution. You know, it's like, take it easy, guys.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, here's the thing. This is what I would like to see from people that decide to move on from Mormonism, that they don't rush out and find a new prophet. You know what I mean? Like, look inside yourself first. I'm not saying John and I, you know, are different in this. I'm fine if people join new religions or whatever. I think that that's fine, but you need to learn. Mormons do not know how to look inside themselves first. And I see Whitefields as our launch pad to sending people to wherever their rocket ship wants to go. That's a really stupid metaphor, but.
Absolutely. And it takes help. Lindsay, I think you and I are both happy to admit we've both been through therapy and it's been great. And I think I'm a pretty well put together guy, but I have hard days.
I don't know how you could go through what we went through and not have therapy. Honestly, if you're doing it without therapy, go get therapy. You don't need to do it alone.
And you know, I think I've made a mistake. Even though the things that we're launching, these group sessions, I've been very well received. We were meeting today with some of our therapists and it's going better than I thought it would.
And I'm because you need to have more faith in me.
I'm pleased. But you know, we use the word therapy. It's not even that. It's that sense of community. It's a sense of getting pointed in the right direction and realizing that, hey, you had a lot of shit put upon you.
And that's okay. You know, we talked about this whole, you know, there's this mindset that once you leave the church, you go so unhappy. And I've seen that happen with, you know, with my preschool, like, oh, Lindsay's so unhappy now. Well, of course, because you guys made it so hard for me, you know, of course I was unhappy. It's okay to be unhappy. The difference is recognizing it and, you know, working through it. And that is something that I've been given since, you know, my faith transition or whatever, that it's okay for me to say, yeah, you know what? This really sucks. I'm not going to say it's a trial from the Lord. I'm not going to say it's because I'm wicked. This is life and I get to move on from it, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. It's a journey. It's fabulous sometimes. Sometimes it's crappy. Listen, either you're going to die or everybody you love is going to die, before that. And that's how the story ends. And meaning is made in this world. And I think the most important thing about life, about making meaning in life, in a real sense, the only thing that matters in our lives is that which survives us. Because you do two things in this world, really. You consume and you create. And I love to consume. I love sitting and watching a sunset while drinking a bottle of wine with a good friend. Wonderful way to spend an evening. But there's nothing that's left of that. And I'm not about to give that up. But we have a chance to influence the world around us just a little bit and to build something that's a little bit good. And, you know, this is when I launched the 1% campaign, which we met. Thank you, everybody. But, you know, my thing was, and I said give 1%, but I would say even give 1% of what you gave to the church. If we had everybody ever listen to the podcast give us 1% of their 10%, we would have a full-time staff, right? We would have people that we could pay. And I'm not saying it has to be here. There's plenty of great things out there. But to make meaning in the world as an atheist, there's this beautiful thread of human endeavors that have gone from people before us and will go on for people after us. And we have a short time in this world in which we can contribute in very little ways. It doesn't mean you have to write the next great American novel, but you can build the structures that will preserve, the things that will continue. And I think in the most ambitious sense, that's what we're trying to do here with Whitefields. We're trying to put that structure in place so things can survive our passions and move beyond. And that's why I say, when I say I'm up and out, even if I never am, which I plan to be, I think we have to always have that in mind. It can't, this is, I think this goes to the problem with prophets is dynamic leaders can be great, but what we need is things that can survive them. We need things that can move beyond, that can.
And you guys, Mormonism is so small and the world is so big. I mean, so big. You can spend your entire life in one library and you're never going to even know all the words on those pages. The world is big. And so eventually you're going to get to a point where you don't need to read Mormon history books all the time or listen to Mormon podcasts all the time. And that will be a wonderful time. And it's okay if that's not where you're at right now. That's totally great. And that's what we're here for. But the world is big and beautiful and go find your corner of it somewhere.
Yeah. And take a breath, take a step back. Remember who you are, where you came from, and those who are following in your footsteps behind you. And you can turn around, give a little bit back, and then move forward.
Yeah.
And that's, I mean, I think that's the best thing to do in life. But I think we should finish up by once again reiterating the point that, Lindsay, you and I are not prophets.
No.
I
don't even have the priesthood. So it's not even possible.
Do I still have the priesthood?
I don't know.
I have as much priesthood as you do, Lindsay.
Oh, good to know. Good. I'm going to ask you for a blessing when we wrap then.
So don't be disappointed when you find out that we're human beings with flaws. Celebrate it. Because everyone is.
Yep.
Right?
Yep. Celebrate it. There you go.
And come join us.
Or buy us the Diet Coke. You could do that too.
There's no Diet Coke in here. You did buy me a gluten-free cookie before we started.
I did. I'm not gluten-free, but there's this fabulous little gluten-free bakery down the hall.
Yes. Yes.
Surprisingly delicious.
And you should at least come and check out the studio. What do we need to do here? I think we need to start monthly, just stitch and bitch sessions.
No, here. No. Let me tell you, maybe the listeners can decide this studio needs a plant.
No. Okay. Lindsay.
It needs a plant.
Lindsay
people.
Has been saying we should get a plastic plant. That is bad feng shui.
I just think it needs some greenery. I would be happy to water a plant if I was in here every week, but I don't want to be an irresponsible, what's the word I want?
You don't
caretaker.
Want a brown dying plant in the corner. Me neither.
I couldn't in good conscience. So if it has to be a plastic one made by child slaves somewhere around the world, that's not good either, but we need some green.
No,
in this
no
place.
Plastic plants. But look at the mugs. I mean, doesn't that – the thing about this podcast is it's – sometimes it's a downer to sit and talk about Mormon bullshit, I mean, all the time. But look at those mugs.
But at least we have the mugs.
I mean, the connection of the most amazing, dynamic people. The church may not be losing the best and the brightest, but they are losing the most interesting people.
I bought him a mug from Disneyland. It's Peter Pan. It says, never grow up.
And it's right there on the top corner. Somebody sent a mug that says, I'm silently correcting your grammar. I think I know who sent it to me, too.
Uh-oh. Well, they're going to be busy then. Come in and see us. And if you can't, you know, we like emails. I didn't want to, like,
I know. I felt like that. There's emails that have got me through times when I thought, oh, I couldn't. Just the smallest note saying, hey, we appreciate what you're doing.
Yeah.
One of my favorite emails of all time came from an Israeli woman who didn't speak very good English, and she was in Jerusalem, and she had nothing to do with them. I don't know how she discovered the podcast, but she said, I can't stop listening. It's the most fascinating thing in the world that this whole culture exists out there, and there's this weird subworld and that sort of thing.
Yeah, so send us emails. I just wanted to explain if you didn't respond, that's why. But John is a nice guy. It's not like he sits around saying, oh, don't send me emails.
You know, people say to me, I don't know if they'll take as an insult or not, but I get, well, you're a lot nicer person than I thought you would be. I hear that a lot. So
I don't know why. I mean, you intimidate people. It's crazy.
I have a sort of bombastic personality on the podcast. No,
I don't. I mean, I've known you for a while now, so it's hard for me to see that. But people have told me you're prickly.
They told me. They said what?
You're prickly.
Prickly.
Online. Prickly online.
Oh, I mean, to them or that I'm prickly?
I don't know.
Who's getting pricked?
I know. That's what I'd like to know. No, I don't know. people say I'm a bad feminist, so it's cool. Like, you know, we just, well, that's another thing.
I've been drummed completely out of that conversation. I've given up the title feminist. I don't even claim it anymore.
And yet here, John and I are breaking gluten-free bread at the table together.
Yeah. I think as far as that, I realize almost everybody that we're hiring in Whitefields is female. Have you noticed that?
Are you collecting your harem? Is that what you're doing?
No,
are a cult personality.
No, I have to say that I am sexist, but towards men.
Patriarchy, John.
Did you see that I don't know if you saw on the schedule coming up, we're doing a podcast. We're going to talk about patriarchy. I'm going to get myself in hot water with your ilk.
That's why we keep you around, John, or we don't, or we kick you out.
Hey, there's at least two of us in this room that have Facebook groups dedicated to hating us, right?
Yeah, that's an accomplishment.
Yeah, not everybody can say that.
Not everyone can say that. Not everybody wants that, trust me.
Facebook group of people who just hate you.
It's not a good feeling, but we've been down this road before. People are always going to question our motives. So we just got to build our work and hope that people show up.
Absolutely. Well, Lindsay, it's been a couple years now that I've known you. You've enriched my life. I'm glad to call you a
friend. Back at your brother.
And we actually don't get to see each other that much. We mostly just talk on the phone. It's rare when we see each other face to face.
I really like hanging out with you. You could do it more.
Yeah, we need to go out to dinner or something.
Yeah.
And
Someone said we had good podcast chemistry.
That's because Lindsay is always telling me dirty jokes. She pretends that she doesn't.
There's going to be like this Mormon Facebook tabloid about you and I. Like, if people are going to like snap a cell phone if they see us at IKEA together and be like, hey.
For the record, we've never been to IKEA together.
But we might be, if you know what I mean.
And we're not even alone in this room right now. So I want to prove to the world that men and women can work together.
And we can. Yeah, yeah. My husband listens to this.
Down's a great guy.
Down is a great guy. Yeah.
All right. Well, if you yourself would like to, does this count as voices?
I don't know. Do you think this is the voices? I'm asking the producer right now.
In case you can't hear, she just said it's not the traditional one, but that's fine. I don't think voices needs to be traditional.
We're not correlated here.
No, this is about your own personal. We have no notes. We just went where the spirit took us.
And you can do it too if you come on into the studio and contact Katrine and you can sit and have a conversation like that.
And for the record, when we do voices, we don't generally do it in front of an audience. Don't be afraid to come into the studio because you'll have an audience watching you because you can do it in private.
Yeah, and you should because I would like to listen to the conversations you're having, so it's not always about you and I talking.
All right, again, thanks to Katrine who's taken over, and I'm excited to hear some new voices. I'm looking at the schedule of ones that are coming up, and I'm already excited about some of the things.
Give us the email again.
It's voices@mormonexpression.com.
Yep.
And that'll get you to the right place. All right, Lindsay, thanks. Here's to the next 10 years.
Yep, cheers.